Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Lords of the Hunt by Kate King. Narrated by Georgia Gray and Stuart Crank. Prologue. Lonnie. The most honest people in the world were liars. From the time I could talk, every other word out of my mouth was a lie, and I was glad of it. People usually lied for good reasons. To protect loved ones, to lessen bad news, or simply without conscious thought. The Fae never lied. But they told more falsehoods than any human I knew. They never downplayed their exhaustion or told a friend they looked lovely to spare hurt feelings. They twisted their words into knots, taking pleasure in confusion and cruelty, while hiding behind the moral superiority of forced honesty. Lying well and often was a necessary skill in the High Court of Elsewhere. It was our best weapon against the Fae. At least, that's what my mother told me. Mother had three cardinal rules. 1, never make a bargain with a fairy. 2, never enter the Waywoods on a hunting day. 3, never give the High Fae a reason to notice you. Lying was one of Mother's unwritten rules. One should always lie, like one should never tell a fairy your true name. One should always lie, like one should never ask questions about the old world. The rules were part of me, as ingrained in my early memories as breathing. As I grew older, however, I realized that Mother's rules had never done shit for her or for me, so I put less and less stock in them. Lying, though, that I could get behind, especially to guard my secrets, especially to protect those I loved. Part 1. A flies to wanton boys are we to the gods. They kill us for their sport. William Shakespeare, King Lear. 1. Lonnie. I bent my head against the warm summer wind as I ran along the thin, winding alley on the Cheapside of town. In other provinces, Cheapside might have been an insult, but not here. Cheap meant you were paying your own way. And in the free human village at the edge of the Fae City of Everlast, they respected self-sufficiency. Envy and pity churned in my stomach in equal measure as I took in the thatched roofs and peeling paint along the street. Overhead, a string of bedraggled flags hung across the alley. I scowled up at the faded colors whipping in the breeze, a macabre reminder of the upcoming hunt. Last month, these houses were full of life. Now half the street stood abandoned and broken, ransacked by rebels during their last raid. Still, colorful decorations covered the broken windows and cold chimneys of every home, as if someone still lived inside. It was a pretty lie, and a story I was intimately familiar with. Several paces ahead, under another string of flags, I spotted the faded and cracked sign of the apothecary. I sighed in relief. I was already late to meet Caliban, but I'd promised myself I would make one stop in the village first. Before I could take another step, the apothecary door flew open. I jumped back, startled. A short, middle-aged woman with a green scarf tied over her flyaway gray hair looked over at me. I knew her by sight, if not by name. Kira's shop assistant. I groaned internally. That woman hated me with every "Morning, Rosie." The shop assistant waved and smiled widely, flashing several broken teeth. "Out early for hunting day?" I faltered, confused, before bobbing something between a curtsy and a nod. "Hello." I self-consciously flicked my loose auburn hair over my ears. "Yes, I'm—" "Oh," the woman laughed, talking over me. I suppose you'll be there serving the court. Yes, I repeated, not bothering to correct any of her many misconceptions. If this woman thought I was my sister, all the better for me. The people of Everlast adored Rosie, while they treated me as something to be feared and avoided at all costs. I could hardly say I blamed them. It had been the same for my mother before she died, and her death had only confirmed their fears. The woman stared expectantly at me, and I flinched, realizing Rosie would likely ask something polite in return. Are you going? Not polite, exactly, but not the worst I could have said. Course. The woman reached down and flicked some invisible speck of dust off her stoop, then faced me again. There's not much else to do around here, is there? Of course, I repeated, nodding vaguely. Her warm smile was jarring compared to the treatment I usually received in the village. But then, this smile wasn't for me. It was for Rosie, and for all I wished otherwise, I was not my sister. I took an eager step forward. Is Kira here? The woman shook her head. Not yet. Did she leave something for you? No, I wouldn't think so. Kira, the local cunning woman, should have no way of knowing I was coming to see her. Though that was no guarantee that she wouldn't. She always knew, for example, that I was not my sister, no matter how much we looked alike. Is everything all right? The woman asked. Oh, yes, I lied. I just had a question. The truth was that my sister's persistent cough was growing more worrisome by the day. I'd hoped Kira would have something to help her, but I would simply have to try back later. After. The shop assistant waved as I hurried away. I'll tell her you were here. Perhaps we'll see you this evening. I bit my tongue to keep from doubling back, from shaking her and screaming in her face. Don't go to the hunts. Don't play their games. You're cheering while they slaughter us. Not everyone shared my personal hatred of the hunts. Most feared the Fae, resented them, but hatred of the wild hunts was most often associated with the Northern Rebels, and they were feared in the capital almost as much as the Royal House of Everlast. No matter what the High Fae King preached about fairness and tradition, the evidence spoke otherwise. The Fae were the hunters, and we were the prey, and anyone who thought otherwise was only lying to themselves. 2. Lonnie. 2 streets away, the pungent scent of pine and moss from the Waywoods dampened the smoke and burnt sugar of the village. I ran as I neared the last row of houses and darted toward the wall that bordered the trees. Slowing to a walk, I crept along the shadow of the wall, my eyes darting side to side, scanning the tree line ahead. Far in the distance, the Palace of Everlast was tattooed against the misty lilac sky, taller even than the swaying trees. Without warning, fingers wrapped around my upper arm and tugged me roughly through a break in the stones.
Took you long enough, Caliban said into my hair, his familiar charred leather scent filling my nose. I thought I would be standing here like a fool until Samhain.
I smirked at him and matched his slightly annoyed tone. I'm sorry to keep you waiting. It is a long walk from the palace, you know.
That. And I'd stopped by the apothecary. But he didn't need to know that. It was my own personal rule. One selfless deed canceled out a selfish one. And meeting with Caliban while skipping out on my chores was undoubtedly selfish.
Tall and suntanned, with dark eyes and powerful arms, Caliban was almost too handsome for his own good. Particularly now, in plain clothes rather than his palace guard's uniform. That was why I kept coming back. That, and he wasn't afraid of me. Or rather,
of the misfortune that seemed to follow wherever I went. He smiled sheepishly. Sorry. Don't worry, Lon. It won't be like this forever. We'll figure something out. I didn't believe that, and neither did he. But it was a nice statement. Caliban was several years older than me, with four generations of family in elsewhere, while I was a kitchen maid, with only my sister for family. In short, he would need a wife soon, and that wife would never be me. No mother would let her son marry a penniless orphan, even if half the city did not consider them dangerous and odd. Caliban grabbed my small, calloused hand in his large, equally rough one and pulled me toward the trees on the opposite side of the wall. Dipping his head to run his mouth over the exposed skin of my neck, I felt him smile, and flutters erupted in my stomach. Eyes peeked out from within the trees, some large and fearsome, some small and nervous. Caliban had never noticed the underfey, and it would only upset him to point them out. Still, I widened my eyes at them until they turned away. Peeping Toms, the lot of them. Caliban stepped back a little so I could meet his wide brown eyes as he ran one long-fingered hand up my leg, under my dress, to cup my core. He trailed his fingers over me, and a high-pitched sound escaped my lips. I squirmed, twining my fingers into his soft hair.
If I had to wait any longer for you, I was going to join the hunting party, he joked.
I froze. What? Caliban shrugged and licked up my neck to my ear.
They haven't started yet, and they're in the forest for this one, you know.
Of course I knew. Everyone knew, what with the way that the palace had been preparing for weeks.
You're not serious.
The hunting season lasted from the 1st of May, today, to the summer solstice on the 21st of June. There were 5 hunts, each taking place in a different province. The first hunt was always in the capital city, the last in the province of Aftermath, where I was born. There had been talk for weeks in the kitchens, from loudmouth idiots bragging that they planned to join the hunts for their chance to be king or queen. I hadn't thought Caliban would ever be so foolish. Caliban pulled back to look me in the eye, and I caught the moment his gaze darted to my right ear.
Maybe I am. I could be a king, you know.
But it's dangerous. That was an understatement. But Caliban would not have liked to hear what I really thought, and it would not have made any difference anyway. He grinned almost apologetically and moved his mouth to hover over mine again, capturing my bottom lip between his.
I like danger. You like picking fights with Ezra and Thaddeus Wyndham, not battling the Everlasts.
I don't think they'd allow a human king. Caliban narrowed his eyes.
There's no rule against it.
I took a deep breath and rearranged my face into something pleasant, calm. All right, I murmured, chasing his mouth.
Then you would be an excellent king. Really?
Absolutely. I lied, desperately wanting to leave behind both the subject of the hunts and of how long it had taken me to arrive. Caliban stepped closer, and I pressed my back harder into the tree, my heart pounding wildly against my chest. He pushed my skirt up until it pooled around my hips.
I missed you.
He waited for me to return the sentiment.
Instead, I undid the top of my bodice.
It hasn't been that long.
Too long.
He pressed a firm kiss to the exposed top of my breast.
I feel as though it's been forever.
I said nothing, shifting, stretching closer as he reached down to undo his belt. He lifted me, and my legs automatically wrapped around his waist.
Fuck,
he said into my hair, sliding into me in a single stroke. I ground down onto him, setting my own rhythm, taking the lead as always. I bent my head to suck on his neck and dug my nails into his arms hard enough to leave marks. A twig snapped, and hooves pounded against the ground somewhere off to our right.
You can't be fucking serious,
a high, imperious male voice shouted.
You might not care about wasting your own time, but do not waste mine.
Panic rose the goose flesh on my arms, and I froze, going cold and stiff in Caliban's arms. There was no mistaking the voices of the High Fae. Musical and enticing to most ears, discordant and terrifying to me.
Go back then,
a second male replied, and I could hear the laughter in his tone.
No one is holding you captive, Sai. Least of all me. If I didn't know better, I'd call you a fucking liar.
I pushed at Caliban's shoulders, urging him to stop, my heartbeat pounding in my ears as the first Fae laughed. They were growing closer. Too close. Every tiny creature in the bushes scattered, running for their dens and homes in hollow trees. I longed to follow. We needed to leave. Now. To run. To hide. Put me down. Caliban pulled his mouth back from my ear. What's wrong?
Shh.
He released me, and my feet landed back on the ground far too hard, stumbling in the fallen dust at the base of the moon dust tree. Around us? The forest had gone silent, like whoever I had heard speaking had frozen in their tracks. Shaking, I peered through the branches and pressed a hand to my mouth, stifling a scream. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I almost wanted to laugh. I should have known better. Humans who entered the forest on hunting days never came out alive. 3. Lonnie. I hated all High Fae, but none so much as the Everlast family.
The royal family had spent centuries killing thousands of innocents, humans, Fae, and all manner of other creatures, in the name of holding on to their power.
It had been years since I'd come face to face with one of the Everlasts, but I would recognize their crest anywhere. I'd seen their symbol countless times before, on coins, on the gates of the castle, on the armor of the soldiers that took my mother away from me, the same armor I dreaded seeing on Caliban. And now, on the saddles of the two Fae males riding toward me.
Bail! One of the Fae barked. What the fuck are you doing?
My stomach sank. It was too much to hope that perhaps there was more than one Fae male named Bail who wore the Everlast crest. Prince Bail was the youngest son of House Everlast. The prince was a favorite among those who worshipped the royal family like gods. At a distance, Prince Bail was beautiful, almost angelic. His perfect square jaw, sensual mouth, and bouncing red-golden curls gave him the look of a tragic hero in an oil painting. As he got closer, however, that cherubic facade cracked. There was something unnerving and predatory about his cat-like yellow eyes. Something cruel in his razor-sharp smile that sent shivers down my spine. Bail swung down from his enormous black horse and strode forward at double the speed any human could have walked, the pace blowing his curls back from his face. His gaze skimmed over our heads, as though he were looking for something in the sky, or perhaps in the village just visible through the trees.
Patience,
he said, his tone full of amusement.
I want to check on something.
His gaze was so intense. It took me a moment to realize he was answering his companion's question of a moment ago, and not speaking to me.
As I said, the other male complained, dropping from his own horse. I don't see why you have to waste our time chasing after...
What?
Shadows?
My gaze darted to the second male, and I blanched. I'd hardly interacted with Prince Sion of the Ravens, the Queen's executioner. Only once, in fact, and it was a scar on my memory.
Sometimes I wondered if our brief meeting 7 years ago had made any impression on him, or if the torment was mine alone. It seemed unlikely that he would remember me, and I prayed he did not. I hadn't seen the heir apparent up close since our last meeting, as he spent most of his time away from the capital, enacting punishments on behalf of his house. He was taller than Prince Bale, but only slightly. He wore a black brocade jacket buttoned to the neck, and carried an enormous raven, too large to be a normal bird, on his shoulder. His dark hair fell into his face, forming a curtain. But when he turned toward me, it was the eyes that made me jump back. They were silver. Not blue, not gray. Silver. Prince Sion set his jaw and came to stand beside his cousin. My heart pounded against my chest, threatening to escape, and goosebumps erupted over my skin. It was rumored he could flatten a village with a single wave of a hand, and looking at him now, I could believe it. I reached slowly for Caliban's hand, wishing I could tell him it would be all right. But that would be a lie that would benefit no one in the end. It would only kill us faster when the Fae heard my whisper. Prince Sion looked directly at me through the leaves, piercing me with his gaze. He cocked his head to the side, something like recognition sparking in his eyes. For a moment, I thought he was going to lunge for me, and I went entirely still. But then he glanced away, as if I weren't there at all. "Fuck this," he said sharply, his tone rougher, harsher than I was used to. "I thought you saw something interesting. If I've seen one guard fucking some slew of whore in these woods, I've seen them all." Prince Bale laughed, and I relaxed slightly. Perhaps they would simply leave? Caliban pulled his hand roughly from mine. "What are you staring at?" His voice was loud as a whip crack, and I looked frantically between him and the approaching Fae princes. I swallowed hard, caught somewhere between terror and confusion. And then, a horrifying idea crossed my mind. He couldn't see them. "Be quiet," I breathed, as softly as possible, though it was pointless. Prince Bale was close enough to hear my heart beating.
"Why?"
Caliban scoffed. He reached for my arm, pulling me around to look at him.
"What the hell are you doing, Lon?"
I shook my head to clear it, blinking furiously. But when I opened my eyes, the Fae still stood before me. By the source, my skin, hot a moment ago where Caliban's fingers had run over me, grew cold and clammy. Caliban grinned, but there was a slight edge to it, like he was trying to make light of a terribly uncomfortable situation. His eyes shuddered as he looked back and forth between me and the clearing. I could feel one more shred of normalcy slipping through my fingers. "He thinks I'm insane." Prince Bale laughed, his teeth glinting, and leaned over to his cousin. He kept his gaze firmly fixed on me. "I think you're losing your touch. The pretty slew of girl can see us." Prince Sion had obviously reached the same conclusion. He took a quick, aggressive step forward, raising one arm in a gesture I recognized as the beginning of an enchantment. I gasped, squeezing my eyes shut, fully expecting to go flying back against the tree behind me. And yet, the pain did not come. I waited an infinitely long moment before cracking my eyes open. "Did you mean to stop?" Bale asked thoughtfully, speaking to his cousin while watching me.
"Fascinating."
At my side, Caliban shifted, annoyed, and stepped back in the direction of the wall. I barely noticed. Prince Sion now stared at me with clear horror on his too handsome face. He spun on his heel, nearly dislodging the raven on his shoulder, who flapped its wings, disgruntled.
"Let's go."
Prince Bale watched me for half a second longer, and I was frozen, transfixed with mingled terror and panic. Something flared in his gaze that I knew all too well. Interest and dread settled in my chest. I'd learned before what happened when you drew the attention of the Fae. I'd spent years hiding in plain sight, trying to blend in. But no matter what I did, they always seemed to see me.
Bale!
Cyan barked, a harsh command.
I'm coming,
the prince called after his cousin, even as he cocked his head to the side, watching me.
I've seen all I needed to see.
4. Lani. My feet pounded a violent rhythm, and I heaved heavy breaths as I retraced my steps back through Cheapside. For the first time in a long while, I barely considered the pinching in my two small shoes. Later, I would have to face Caliban and whatever he told the other guards, but not now. Now, I was grateful and surprised to be alive. The gates of the palace appeared out of the mist. The pointed iron spires gave the impression of jagged teeth about to clamp down around me, swallowing me whole. I crossed through the open gates and started up the long cobblestone road beyond. There were no guards at the gate, and no one stopped me as I ran up to the gleaming ebony stone palace on the hill. I'd always found the lack of soldiers unnerving, a subtle implication of power. The message was, "Come in if you like. There's nothing we need to be afraid of." Afraid to draw too much attention to myself, I hugged the edge of the property and ran across the grass, staying close to the shadow of the high wall that separated the palace from the Waywoods and blocked the city from view. No one stopped me. No one was there. The silence and emptiness raised the hair on the back of my neck. It was hardly ever this empty, and it appeared the quiet was an omen. Of what? I wasn't sure. The sprawling lawn was bare, but for the path that led up the hill to the palace. The castle itself was lit up, every window bright with gleaming firelight, a beacon against the purplish sky. The servants' entrance was around the back of the castle, beyond the enormous gardens. Pink blossoms fluttered to the ground around a grove of sweetly fragrant pear trees, the flowers twirling down like elegant confetti. Rainbow blooms dotted row after row of hedges, and roses the size of my head hid the homes of cranky underfae, as prickly as the thorns they lived on.
Lani!
I jumped at the sound of my name echoing off the palace walls and faltered, coming to a skittering halt in the middle of the path, dust and pebbles kicking up around my feet. Spinning, I was met with my sister hurrying toward me. The moment I saw her, guilt settled in my stomach. I'd completely forgotten to go back to the apothecary. Not that she'd asked, but that was just it. Rosie never asked for help, but she desperately deserved it.
There you are.
Rosie darted toward me, her eyes cast down, her arms wrapped around her body as if to warm herself despite the high temperature of the day.
I've been looking for you everywhere.
Rosie came to a halt in front of me. The sleeves of her cornflower blue dress were frayed on the ends, but aside from that, you would never know she'd had the same dress repaired 4 times, and it hadn't been new when she bought it. I sighed, trying to school my face into something calm. Here I am. Is someone looking for me?
Yes.
She gave a half-hearted smile that pulled at the skin around her mouth.
Me?
I rolled my eyes. You know what I mean. Though we were twins, I'd never managed the same refined elegance my sister seemed to exude without effort. Rosie's auburn curls were pinned neatly back from her face, and the expression behind her large brown eyes was calmer than I could ever hope to be. She even had fewer freckles than me, from less time in the sun. She was a born lady's maid, used to serving wine and standing for long hours in uncomfortable silk gowns. I was better suited to work below floors, as I'd never been able to control my
Sample complete. Ready to continue?